Welcome back to the Omniverse Comics Guide podcast. I'm Dave Molyneux, and we're here for another collector's item special. In these episodes, we invite a guest to delve into their comic collection and share some of their favourite items. This time, we have a fellow Brit. I never call Brits, so that's a weird thing to say. Hailing from much further up north than I am. He's the author of the Vertigo Weekly Reader, which chronicles the early years of DC's Mature Readers line of comics. And he's about to release his first ever graphic novel from Top Shelf / IDW with artist Cy Smith, Giggs, which gives us an unsettling view into a not-so-distant future, a celebration of music that will make you a little more careful of what you wish for. Joining us in the Omniverse today, it's Mark Mosedale. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, Dave. I'm good, thank you. How are you? I'm cool. Quite fried, actually.
Are you?
I'm a little bit jangly. As we record the books coming out tomorrow, so the last sort of few weeks I've been doing much more like staring at my phone than usual. Lots of sort of googling my own name, frantically emailing people, you know, all this kind of stuff. And my nerves are a little bit shot.
Do you have to do a lot of self-promotion?
I don't think we have to do a lot of self-promotion
it can't
necessarily,
hurt.
But yeah, I mean, this is my first sort of book, you know, it's my first anything really. It's my first comic and I just kind of want it to land really. I hope that I'll be doing more and that I won't have to do all this next time or the time after, but I'm, you know, if it doesn't succeed, I don't want to be looking back and thinking, oh, well, you could have tried a little bit harder for the last few, you know, month or two.
That's the thing. You kind of got to try everything at this point, haven't you? There's so much out there. But it's such a great book. And thank you for sending a copy over. I read it within about 2 days, which I rarely get time to read books in quick succession these days at the moment, it seems. But I just loved it. It wasn't remotely what I was expecting, but in the best possible way. I tend not to read the blurb. And I just had an idea, or saw some of the quotes about making you want to go to gigs again. And I had no idea it was going to be what it was, which was this kind of vision of a not so distant future. And some of it was, in theory, the kind of things that we're all willing for at the moment, and maybe things don't go quite as we thought. Not to spoil anything, I'm trying very carefully not to spoil anything.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, those pull quotes as they were coming in, it was quite interesting to see what people were saying. You know, like a couple, like you're probably thinking of, like we got Rob Percy from Skepwax Records. He did one, and his was very focused on sort of music. And so was Boff Wally, who's he was one of the founders of Chumbawamba. They were obviously very much focused on the musical aspects. But then Mark Russell, the comics writer, he sort of honed in on something about meeting your heroes. I thought, oh, that's interesting, and Kieran Gillen compared us to Jeff Noon's Vert sort of Cyber Manchester. I was like, whoa, I didn't think we were as weird as that. And Shelley Bond compared us to Joe Strummer stepping out onto the stage. I was like, bloody hell. It was, you know, it's sort of a look through someone else's eyes at what the book is, because you know, it's very hard to look at it impartially when you've been so immersed in it for years.
No doubt. How long were you working on it for?
Well, it's 7 years since we started. We were debating this last night. We had our first sort of event for it as part of Leeds Lit Fest. And before it started, we were like, so when did we start? And Cy had more confidence in his answers than me, so I'm going with his. In March 2019, we first sort of spoke about doing something. We finished it nearly 2 years ago. So it was about 5 or 6 years sort of in production. So like some of the stuff, like I've been rereading it because some of the stuff in it, it's been 5 years since I was sort of actively working on it. Yeah.
I'm interested in how people go through the creative process. And I saw an interview years ago with Graham Linehan, and I know he's not necessarily someone that people are looking up to these days anymore, but his process was interesting in that he writes his scripts for things like the IT Crowd, and then he puts them in a drawer, and then he doesn't look at them again for a year. So it's almost like someone else wrote it, so he can look at it subjectively, which is, it's interesting.
Yeah, I can completely see it. I mean, sounds like a real luxury having a year to sort
Yeah.
of put something aside. Who cares about deadlines, eh? Well,
Yeah, exactly.
not top shelf, really. I mean, they don't really care about deadlines. It's quite gratifying going back and being able to look at it with reasonably fresh eyes and go, oh, I do like this. Not like, oh God, you see stuff and there are things that I would do differently now,
Yeah.
but I do like it, which is quite nice, and I can sort of say that with somewhat fresh eyes, even if I can't see it in the way that someone who's never looked at it before would.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I mean, what made you choose Ivy as your main character?
Did we choose her? I don't think we did choose her. She just
She chose
sort
you.
of, yeah, she kind of did. She just sort of emerged. I mean, she her the fact that she's a black woman was not like essential to the character really, And I was a little nervous about writing a black woman for a while. I was writing her a bit in sort of 2020, and I was like, oof. Things started to really heat up around that kind of stuff, and then
Yeah.
they kind of things settled down a bit. I'm like, this is okay. I'm not writing about a black character being black. I'm just like, there's not enough black characters out there. It's a sort of inflection point for the character, but it's not central to the story, so I sort of felt okay about it. I think it's interesting, actually. I guess when I started writing Ivy, I felt a lot of kinship with Ivy as someone who'd been a young person who was sort of kind of lost and didn't know what to do, and kind of got adopted by various sort of like older friends who would on occasion lecture me about the, I go, oh, have you heard this? And they go, oh yeah, well, that's just that plus that plus blah, 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 blah. And I, oh yeah, thanks, okay, cool. Nothing new under the sun, apparently. And when I was a bit younger, I was that person, and now I can imagine someone looking at me and saying, how did you let it get like this?
We all become Sid eventually, by the sound of it.
Well, I mean, let's hope not, but yes.
Let's hope no, let's hope not. Shall we start to take a look at some of your choices for tonight?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So we're going to begin with a Holy Grail slash precious item that you managed to track down. What have you got?
Weapon X number 3. So this is the Age of Apocalypse
No
Wolverine
way.
miniseries. Yeah. And I know you're thinking, how can this possibly be a precious sort of hard to track down
No,
object?
go for it.
But it's all about your level of access, right? And in 1995, I was 11 or 12 years old, I must have been when this came out. And I did not have a lot of access to comics. So I imagine you look like you're about my age. We probably had a similar kind of way into comics of finding them through news agents, maybe
Yeah.
getting British reprints of American stuff. Maybe you were a 2000 AD guy. I wasn't especially, actually,
No, I
but
missed all of
yeah, me too. Me too. Which makes me feel a little sad, but here we are.
It's not too late.
And it's not too late, but you sort of feel like maybe you,
There's a lot there, though.
yeah, and the people who love it the most got into it a long time before now, didn't they?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so it was sort of news agents, and then I kind of started to discover like American imports on news agent shelves. WH Smith's might have a few. There was a company
Yeah, they
called
did, didn't they?
Comag. Do you remember them?
Yes, they used to leave the stickers on. They used to drive me nuts because you'd
Yeah,
have to try and get
yeah,
them off when there was a little mark.
yeah,
Don't you understand?
yeah. And you just end up with this random smattering of American comics, and you're
Yeah.
kind of thinking, why aren't these A4? And
True.
who are the spirits of vengeance?
And why is it just one
And
issue? When I
yeah.
first started reading, so it was about 1989 when I was about 11, 12, and there were only 20 titles from Marvel for the month, and they were releasing more, but we only got the select 20. So you couldn't necessarily, if there was a crossover event and stuff, you couldn't necessarily fill in the gaps because they just weren't releasing them. So Comag just picked those. So you were kind of at the whim of what they were choosing to bring out.
At this point, though, I feel a bit more like Sid, who, for
I know I
listeners
do.
at home, is an octogenarian punk who's stuck in a care home. Who, you know, their relationship is very much like it becomes a friendship, and it's based on music, but there is an element that kind of comes through and comes back later on in the story of kind of generational failure of a younger person looking at an older person and kind of saying, how did you let it get like this? But for years, I just had this like really random assortment of like, here's an issue of Iron Man, and here's they quite often did seem to be Marvel rather than DC. You know, I don't have a particular Marvel bias, although my first couple of choices might lead you to think otherwise. But yeah, it was odd, you know. And you look back, like the exploits of Spider-Man, if you ever got
Yeah, yeah.
that was a really good package, actually.
It
You know,
was.
it was $1.99, you know, which was not cheap in 90s money, but you got 4 issues, and they
There
did
we
all the
go.
work of making sure any crossovers were sort of lined up for you. It was a little confusing. I genuinely, the first time I got an issue of that, I was looking at the classic reprint stuff, and I'm like, why does this look like this? You know, why? Like, it was something next to that. I think it was Mark Bagley on Amazing Spider-Man at the time, and Sal
Yeah.
Buscema was doing Spectacular. And then there was Spider-Man
Was
2099 in
Oh
there as
yeah,
well.
Rick Leonardi, yeah.
Yeah, and they all looked, you know, quite contemporary for the time, and sort of slick, and the storytelling was all different. And then you look at this stuff from the 60s, and I'm like, why do these characters look like this? Why are they dressed like this? I didn't have any context. I didn't understand that I was looking at a reprint from like not even that long ago, was it? For then, you know, it was only
No, I
30
suppose
years
not.
ago. And I was just sort of thinking, God, we're talking about a comic that is further in the past, you know, Weapon X number 3, further in the past now than those early Spider-Man comics would have been when we
Yeah,
were
I guess
reading
you.
them in the
God, that's
exploits of
scary.
Spider-Man.
That's a scary thought. Oh, thanks for making me feel old, dude.
Yeah, you're
But
welcome.
why Weapon X3?
So at some point, I don't know how this came about. I think I went to Leeds at one point. At this point, I was living in Wakefield, right? And I was sort of 10, 11. And I went into Leeds with, I don't know, my mum or something, and discovered comic shops. And I was like, oh
Right.
my God, there's such a thing as a comic shop, and it sells only comics, and they've got all this stuff, and it's amazing, and I don't know where to start, and oh my God, what do I do? And I couldn't get to Leeds, you know. Like, so I knew these comic shops were out there, but I couldn't get to them. But my grandma would still go into Leeds sort of quite regularly. She lived in Wakefield too by this point, and she had a best coat that she only wore to go into Leeds. She didn't wear it for Wakefield. Wakefield didn't deserve the nice coat. So my dear old grandma, she'd put on a Leeds coat, and then I would make her go into Forbidden Planet, or it wouldn't have been Forbidden Planet then. I think it would have been like Odyssey 7 or something, and request these random sort of American comics. And so I nearly went with Age of Apocalypse Alpha for the cover question, but I just sort of decided that, well, I picked something else for reasons that we'll get to. So I think it must have been that shiny foil cover that sort
It
of
was
sucked me
cool though,
in.
right? I mean, it's I loved those what were they called? It's Chromium. I think they were Chromium covers. Because like when I've got the Age of Apocalypse, I had the original issues, and that was actually the last storyline I read for about a year. I decided to take a breather because I was late teens and there are other things
That
out there.
classic.
Other distractions. And so Age of Apocalypse was kind of the end of it for me for a while. But now that I've got omnibus versions, I like the big chunky collections, but they don't include the chromium covers. Like you should put the chrome on it. It's so cool.
They should do those, you know, those Taschen huge great volumes that you get of like the sort of early Spider-Man they've done so far.
Yeah.
They should do that, include like chrome covers sort of inside, or I
They'd
think
be so pretty.
that'd be nice. Yeah, so anyway, I did get Amazing X-Men 1 and Astonishing X-Men 1 and Weapon X one, but I think I just had to pick one because, I was 11 or whatever, and I was on a budget. And the reason I've gone for Weapon X 3, do you know this cover? I
I'm
think
trying
I
to
saw that
remember
you
which cover
recently
it is.
did. So it's got Wolverine, one-handed Wolverine,
Yeah.
Weapon X, sorry. I mean, it's difficult to know what he's actually doing. He's being dragged downwards by some sort of cyber tentacly
Oh,
stuff. He's
yeah.
sort of lurid green, like illuminated from beneath. I can't remember what happens in the issue, Dave.
Well, that's all
It's
right. It
not.
has the Pretty Boys, which I don't remember them being called that, but it's Donald Pierce and his cyborg guys. But this series was nuts, though. Did you think it was the end of the X-Men and that was going to be permanently like this at that point?
I think I did, yeah. I think I was still young enough to sort of not understand the dynamics of the marketplace and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, I guess this is it now. And I must have known the X-Men from the cartoon. I was like, yeah, this okay. And you look back and it's just nuts. Like that, particularly that first Alpha issue, like the buildings have all sort of like toppled over onto each other and stuff, and it's like no one's given any thought to world building. They're just like, what's gonna look cool? I think,
It
everyone's
worked
sort
though,
of,
right?
yeah, it did. I thoroughly enjoyed it at the time. But what happened with Weapon X number three was sort of dug myself into a financial hole. So I wasn't sure like what to do. I got to a point where I had a subscription, sorry, not a subscription, a standing order with my local news agent for Exploits of Spider-Man and something called The Ancestral Trail, which was a series of weekly, bi-weekly books that were sort of like a serialized fantasy novel, but with a lot of painted artwork in them. It's the sort of thing, it was the kind of 90s equivalent of, you get like those sort of runs of, like, I don't know, classic DC graphic novels, and there'll be one every couple of weeks, and it's sort of bagged with some extra paraphernalia, and there's a graphic novel in there, and they all look nice on your shelf next to each other. It was it was sort of the 90s equivalent of that. So I had these two standing orders, and they both came in, and I'd asked my grandma to get me Weapon X number three. And I just sort of didn't have the money. And I got so stressed out about it that I was like,
Oh no.
can I have this? Like, is my grandma just gonna have to keep it? Does she sort of want it? And I wanted it so much, and I got really wound up. And my mum eventually was presumably trying not to piss herself at my levels of stress. It's like, it's okay, Mark. We'll give you an advance on your pocket money, and you can sort of pay off all your creditors that you owe money to. So, if I'd have waited, presumably if I'd have waited not that long, I could have got that issue for, 10 pence or something in the
Probably,
back issue
yeah.
bin. I imagine the world is awash with copies of Weapon
Oh,
X number three.
more than
So,
likely, but still, it means a lot
yeah,
at
it
the
was,
time, right? That's the whole
yeah,
point.
and it was very hard to get hold of for me.
Well, the thing, there was a period of time when it didn't seem there were that many comic shops around, and it kind of picked up. Or it did down here in the south, and all of a sudden they just all vanished again. It's kind of back to being really difficult to get into comic shops. I go the book route these days, but I do miss getting back issues.
Yeah, the thrill of the chase. And
Yeah.
every now and then you will still stumble across something new. It's not so much like, oh, I could never have got this. Just, I never would have known this existed, and I would never have stumbled across it in the backwaters of DC Infinite or Marvel
Yeah.
Unlimited, or and they would never have got collected either. So there is still that, but yeah, I miss that. When I was sort of first buying comics from comic shops, I bought a lot of back issues because they were cheaper quite often. The more recent ones, and I didn't care if it had come out this week. I was studiously putting together a collection of Chuck Dixon Robin comics,
Ah,
Tim Drake
yeah.
stuff. I was just sort of slowly putting together a sort of pretty complete run, and kind of coming up to date on that. Like, that was my project for quite a while, and then
What made you pick that? Just
it was
dug
a
it.
kid, and I was a kid, and it was relatable. And I think it's easy to Going back to Ivy, I suppose. It's easy to think when you're a white bloke and you're very well represented in comics that, oh, it doesn't matter, anyone can get into anything. And but like actually it does mean a lot to people to sort of see themselves in a comic. And when I was, a 10-year-old boy, it was important to me to be reading about someone who was sort of my age. I mean, he wasn't my age, was he? But he was closer
Near
than,
enough, closer than Batman.
closer than Batman.
Well, you touched on the Weapon X cover. So, shall we take a look at your favorite cover?
So this is another X-Men one. I am probably coming across as more fannish than perhaps I am for the X-Men. I do love the X-Men, but maybe not quite as much as this is suggesting. But it's New X-Men 114. Does that
Grant Morrison.
immediately jump to mind for you? Yeah, first one of the Grant Morrison and quietly run. And that was just something else at the time. This is the comic that sort of brought me back. I had that same thing you just sort of alluded to, where I kind of wandered away from, certainly from superhero comics for a while. And I got into some Vertigo stuff. I took a break altogether. Then I got into some Vertigo stuff and some, kind of more, I was going to say indie, not really indie, but more
What's
alternative for the
mature and
time.
a little more grown up, potentially.
And I, yeah. Yeah.
Ish.
Itch. And I just sort of felt like superhero comics weren't for me anymore. And then when I saw that Grant Morrison was writing X-Men, because I'd been quite into the Invisibles and stuff. And when I saw he was writing X-Men and then that cover, I was just like, whoa, okay, I'm back. I'm back in
Wow,
it.
how could you not though? There are some writers now I kind of complain a bit about because it feels like they've just zoned in on the cool moments. But Grant Morrison does that so well because he still backs it up with some insane ideas, crazy storytelling, complete random twists that actually make sense because he's done something smart. Sometimes he will just go super random, like that Sea Guy series. I don't know if you've read that. That was so strange. But this was, oh, it was so good. And it was probably the best the X-Men had been since when?
Yeah, I
Quite a
don't.
while.
Yeah, I
Possibly,
mean,
arguably, Age of Apocalypse, even.
my first exposure to the X-Men was in, do you remember Overkill?
Yeah, with Hell's Angel and the Marvel UK magazine series.
So that was another one of my random sort of news agent kind of pickups, which was probably a bit too. This feels so laughable now, but a bit too grown up for me at the time.
God,
Like I've got
that.
a few issues of it that I've picked up in the last few years. I'm like, it was not a grown-up comic,
No.
but
It was
it
kind
was
of
a
2000 AD light in a lot of ways, I think.
it absolutely was, yeah. It was like a 12-year-old boy's idea of grown up,
Yeah, I think that's pretty
which is
fair.
cool. But the X-Men showed up in an issue of that, and that was the first time I'd come across them. I think that was before like the cartoon or any of the UK
God.
X-Men reprints or anything. And they did seem kind of scary in that. And so in my head, that was always what the X-Men were. They were these sort of kind of scary superheroes. And you look at the vast majority of X-Men comics, and there's nothing scary about those guys, really.
I don't know. There are
They're
some
not young
oddball
bloods,
things you wouldn't want to hang around with them.
That's true, yeah.
Like the
I mean,
dude
you
with the
would.
maggots in his belly.
But like this cover for New X-Men 114 does make them look quite scary. They're all in black leather. It kind of looks like the Matrix, which is quite fitting because
Clearly an influence.
but the Matrix apparently drew quite heavily on Invisibles. So,
Yeah, he got quite shirty about that as well, didn't he, back in the
oh,
day?
did he?
Yeah, I think he was basically refusing to finish the Invisibles at one point because he felt that where Warner Brothers owned DC, who owned Vertigo, he felt that they'd stolen his thing. And then he got to this point where he went, yeah, but I kind of stole it from Philip K. Dick. So everyone's a thief, so it's fine. And then he carried on and he did the ending.
Do remember the ending coming out. It felt like years
Yeah,
later.
I think it was a big gap. Yeah. Have you read the
Interesting.
Disinformation Guide to the Invisibles?
No.
I don't know how easy it is to get hold of a copy, But it's really good. So those disinformation guides came out years ago, and they focused on things like I think it's like a politics one that did magic, and he did a piece in there about how to practice magic and stuff. But there was also a guide to the Invisibles, and I think it was the only comic book it focused on. That was the only series that was treated this way. It's kind of like your director's commentary on that series, and then they've got little interviews as well with some of the artists about how he healed. Heal one of the artist's cat, and I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, there are some crazy stories behind it. I got completely obsessed with the Invisibles at one point.
As I've read The Invisibles, I felt like I understood it for like a few minutes at a time.
Well, that's just it. So admittedly, the first time I read it, I thought, I'm not sure I follow, but there's something about this is sticking in my head. And then I read it again, and then I read it with the guide at the same time, and it was just okay, because you would never get all of his references. It's insane.
He's sort of deep into all that kind of, like Philip K. Dick, but also Illuminatus trilogy. What's that guy called?
I don't know.
This is really going to annoy me if I don't get it. But all
Can
that
cheat, look
kind
it
of
up.
occult kind of Discordianism and all that sort of stuff.
Because it's
Robert Anton Wilson.
Robert Anton Wilson. It's suggested that him and Alan Moore have been having a magic war with against each other for years through comics.
I quite like all that stuff. I don't really, it's not exactly my cup of tea. Although I did put a sigil in my wallet, off the back of something Grant Morrison said about how to draw a sigil.
Really?
I think it worked. I wanted a book. I wanted to do a book. 15 years later,
I'm sensing
15 years
some quite
later, Gigs is coming out.
single-mindedness.
Not really. I mean, my approach to getting a book made was sort of, I'll
Some
sort of sit
actual work went in.
around. Well, I didn't really do anything until Sai approached me and said, I'm kind of sick of writing for myself, Mark. Do you want to try something? I was like, oh, yeah. Because I just, it's hard and expensive to get a writer to work with. So I'd been sitting around thinking, I'd really like to write comics, but not having anyone to write them for years, and not really just, I was just a bit too busy to sort of figure it out. So when Sai showed up, I was like, yes, please. And then we ended up writing a 270 odd page graphic novel.
So that's the thing. So you've known each other. He approached you. Is it, I guess the idea is, I think, I don't know, a lot of the time you hear all these stories of writers approaching artists. What made him come to you, especially if this is your first comic, a first
I mean,
book?
I will forever like really owe him for that because, he can make comics without me, right? He could have been making comics without me, and he had been writing for himself previously. We knew each other through a book club I'd started, which was sort of Okay Comics adjacent. So we knew each other through that, not spectacularly well, but a bit. Was I still a journalist at that point? I would have probably still told you I was a journalist whilst quietly making most of my money from copywriting.
Who are you a journalist for? Do you not want to say?
I was a
You don't
video.
have to say.
No, it's fine. I mean, I never really particularly covered myself in glory. That makes me sound like I was terrible. I wasn't terrible. I was just sort of,
Don't say this in the interview, whatever you.
I was just kind of mid performance. I was a video games journalist to start with, and I did that for a bit too long, and then I was sort of freelancing, kind of more all purpose. I did some stuff for the Yorkshire Post. I had a few bits in the Guardian, but just for the running blog and so on. And then eventually, I was like, oh, I just need some money, and I discovered that you can make it through copywriting, and it's you know.
Was going to say that I thought you were going to say I need some money, so I decided to write comics. That's maybe not the best way. It's a much
Well, I
slower
mean,
process.
nowadays writing comics is looking like my exit plan for copywriting because, like, who wants to be a copywriter these days? Thanks to ChatGPT and all the rest of it.
Someone still needs to do the copywriting on those wodges of text that don't actually mean that much when you delve into it.
Clients don't care that it doesn't mean that
No, they
much.
don't seem to. It's quite funny. There was someone the other day said they were working on something on something like ChatGPT, and they needed 25 points written out. And then as they read them, the latter ones were really weak. It's almost like it was rushing it towards the end to get it back in time. And he literally confronted it and went, yeah, so the latter ones were pretty poor. I'm quite disappointed. And it was going, I'm really sorry. Do you know what? The thing is, I have to give you a response within a set amount of time. And I just kind of rushed the end of it and just got it over to you. I mean, for the most part, people only read the first few anyway. This is like a bad employee. Like, what is this about? It's so surreal. Come on.
Very much with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to say actually about Cy Smith's art, as just as an aside, one of the things that I really loved about the art on this series is particularly some of the splash pages, because there were some I was just sat staring at. And it's funny because there's one, I think it was one seasonal one, so it's letting us know what time of the year it was. And I think the trees had grown back, and I can't remember if the scaffolding was still outside of Sid's retirement place. But I was just sat staring at that for ages. It's just so beautifully done. And I'd happily get that on my wall.
That the one,
I think, yes,
yeah.
that was the one.
So I wasn't going to listen to you. I had been listening to your podcast, but I wasn't going to listen to the one where you mentioned gigs because I don't know. It still feels a little bit weird. But Sai randomly somehow stumbled across it and sent a link through to the episode today, saying, "Oh, have you
Oh.
seen this?" I was like, "That's the podcast I'm doing tonight." So I did listen to it, and he said that he really appreciated what you'd said on that episode about
Oh.
that. That page, he said, it's the opposite of my wife, who she managed to read the whole thing in 40 minutes by just reading the words and not really looking at any of the art.
I'm regularly referred to as the opposite of my wife, to be fair.
High
It's my pseudonym.
praise, yeah.
Yeah. There's some great moments as well. I love the graffiti on the wall and the rise up
Yeah,
stuff as well. The
very
app is
pleased with
the
that
enemy.
one.
There's so much about this that feels so like it feels like it's becoming more relevant as we build up to the launch of this book.
It's been quite strange. Like we got the contract for it in 2021. We'd started talking about it in 2019, and I kept thinking, "Oh, I hope the moment for a story about, AI taking jobs and universal basic income doesn't come and go whilst we're making it." As it became clear how long it was going to take to do, and like it just keeps getting more and more relevant. And like
Yeah.
there's new headlines every day, and you're like, "Well, that's terrible for the world, but it's great for
It's good for
sales."
the
Yeah.
book.
Yeah.
It's almost
Let's
like
hope
this is your sigil. You've willed this world into
it.
existence.
Just so that I can have a
Just so you can
graphic
sell
novel
some
out.
books.
Yeah, it is strange. When I first realized it was going to take 2 years to come out from us finishing it, I was quite disappointed, but in a way it's sort of better for it landing now than it would have been if, they'd have had it out sort of back then. And
Yeah.
it's not like it was irrelevant back then either. It
No,
just.
but it's clearly way more prescient now than it would have been then. Like it's crazy. Most days now something comes up and I think about this book having read it. And I'm not saying that because you're sat there. It's stuck in my head, and then the stuff that's happening is like, oh my God, this is gigs.
Yeah. For a couple of days, on Instagram, I would just sort of pick a post from Wired, and then just sort of fish and not even fish through the book, just the art that I happen to have downloaded into my sort of drive where I'm fishing for social media assets, and I'd just find something in there and put it next to it
Oh,
as an
nice.
illustration and saying, pre-order gigs before there are no jobs left to. Before you
Yeah.
don't have any money left so that you can buy it. And there'd be a guy like reaching into a vending machine, trying to pull out something to eat, and the headline would have been something about the jobs apocalypse 2 minutes down the road. Oh, cool, yeah.
How come it take?
I
Yeah.
would prefer to be wrong and for the book to sell
Well,
better.
yeah, just so we know there, it's not willed
Yeah.
into existence, just a disclaimer.
Yeah.
How come it takes 2 years between finishing it and it coming out?
I think that's just reasonably standard in
Is
the
it?
book publishing sort of end of the world. I know that in, if you're writing monthly comics and then the trade comes out, it can be like 3 months from the last issue to the trade. But I
Yeah.
guess at that point, the point at which Marvel or Image or whoever is booking printing time, it's already pretty well finished. It's just a different rhythm. We'd originally been told it might be about a year because the sort of big bookshops sort of require that, and then just getting it all printed and stuff. And then I think it was just that Top Shelf was had a pretty full schedule already for the next year. We didn't get a deadline. I presume no one is getting much of a deadline because I don't know. Chris Stavros is just pretty chilled out, and they're not throwing. You're not getting a page rate. You get an advance. You get your advance, but you're not getting like a page rate or whatever. So I guess if you're in that situation, you can't start cracking the whip and being like, "Have this on my desk by such and such." So I think that just means stuff comes in, they go, great, they put it on the schedule, and we just sort of happen to land at a time when they'd already got a pretty full schedule.
Well, it seems like it's worked out incredibly well. And speaking of gambles that pay off, yeah, do you see what I did there? How would you like to share your gamble that paid off? Or is this the gamble that
Well, it would have been a fairly good answer, and it if I with my marketing head on, that should have been it.
off?
But
Rewind.
the gamble that paid off was handing my CV in at OK Comics when I was, I think, 19. It just seemed, I don't know why I thought this with hindsight, but I was like, it just seems super unlikely that I could get such a great job as working in a comic shop. This was pre-Marvel Cinematic Universe, pre the sort of mainstreaming of like kind of geek culture and comics culture. But for some reason, they're working in a comic shop seemed quite unattainable to me at the time. But I saw they were hiring, they were quite new at the time. And I was like, okay, that's probably better than my pub job that I've got. I was a student at the time, I was studying in Leeds, and I handed in my CV, and I had an interview in the stock room over a cup of instant black coffee upstairs. And initially, it was only supposed to be like 3 months cover for the other guy who went on to be in the band Hookworms, if that means anything to you,
Oh
by the
no, I
way.
haven't heard of them, no.
They were just on the cusp of making it, and then the lead singer got Me Too'd, and
Oh
it
no.
all broke apart. It sounds like he wasn't. Like he was pretty bad, but you've got to feel bad for the rest of the band,
Well,
haven't
that's the thing, it's everyone else that has to deal with a
you?
fallout.
But anyway, he was going on tour with a band, not Hookworms at the time, and they just needed someone to cover for 3 months. And I did pretty good, and Jaron ended up giving me most of this other guy's hours.
Because how long have they been around? They've been around for a.
It's 20 something years. They had a 20th birthday party. Well, yeah, like 24 years or something now. It's ridiculous. Like I feel so old when I think about it.
Don't. God.
I worked there for, well, on and off for about 7 years or something, because I just kind of couldn't let it go because I loved it so much. And Jared's still one of my best friends. Like I met my wife through an OK Comics event. We were at the Lit Fest yesterday. Someone looked at Jared. He'd come to watch it and said, "Oh, sorry, are you waiting to buy a copy?" And I was like, "Don't worry, Jared owns more copies of gigs than anyone else on the planet." He's just ordered so many of them for the shop because he's been so supportive and cool about it.
That's brilliant.
So yeah, it really did sort of change my life. Like most of my friendships now have sort of. They're not all people I necessarily worked with or whatever, but they've kind of branched out from there. And it really kind of changed my taste in comics. It sort of broadened my horizons quite a lot. The first thing I bought with my staff discount was Jimmy Corrigan collection. And I've
That's
still to
so
this day never
random.
finished it.
Well, I've literally just bought one of his other books, and I can't remember the name of it now, but it's Rusty Brown.
Right, yeah.
So that's the same author, isn't it? And I can't remember his name
I
either.
think so, yeah.
But I haven't tried it yet, but it looks like it's very led by graphic design, which appeals to me, but it also just looks very quirky and weird. But I love stuff like that's just a little more off the wall, a little bit different. And it's great to know, like, the freedom that you can have to tell stories in comics is so vastly different from the way that you can tell stories on TV. I mean, the closest you've got is probably TV and films, as a visual medium, but so many people are involved in a TV show, and there's, the changes from writing a script to what appears on screen with so many people involved is just going to be massive. Whereas what you're doing ends up being much more pure and closer to your original idea, I guess.
Yeah, and no one's spending millions of pounds on it
No.
up front, so you can afford to be sort of weird. Can you imagine if can you imagine like a I don't know producers of EastEnders saying we're cancelling EastEnders and we're going to do an alternate reality EastEnders
I wish they would. Post-apocalyptic
for
London.
yeah. I mean that's
The
probably an
fruits got off
unfair
on the fruit
example.
stand.
It's an unfair example, isn't it? But you can just be a lot weirder in comics, can't you?
Yeah.
Because that's why superhero comics are better than superhero films or superhero TV,
Oh, yeah.
because you've got the agility and the freedom to just take weird, interesting chances, and if they don't pay off, that's kind of okay. Like there's not too much on the line. Whereas if you do it in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, suddenly like millions of dollars or billions of dollars are kind of pouring down the drain and
Well,
everyone's in big trouble.
look at Love and Thunder, Thor: Love and Thunder. There's an
If
example.
that
Sorry.
was a comic, and arguably it was a comic, it was a Jason Aaron comic, you'd be like, oh well, that was interesting. Or it was fun. And if you didn't like it, it's okay because there's another one next month. And yeah, you make a film like that and people don't like it.
It's not quite for everyone, but
No.
that's fine. What is?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Jimmy Corrigan is too bleak for me, I've got to
Yeah.
say. But I love thumbing through Chris Ware comics. I buy them and then I often just don't read them because it's the sort of comics that make me feel like maybe I misunderstand reality and it's much worse than I think it is.
Oh,
Do you know? Like maybe my own life is sadder than I think it is, and I've just sort of I'm too stupid to figure it out. I'm not sensitive enough to sort of understand. He's one of those guys, he's Chris Ware, but he's brilliant though. Like,
yeah, you can see
incredible.
it's. I'm a little intimidated. I haven't even started that book yet, but I know that it's going to be an endurance trial to a degree. What's the last gig you went to?
It's not that long ago, actually, for me. I think it was Craig Finn from the lead singer of the Hold Steady.
Oh.
Yeah, he was in Manchester. I think that was the most recent one. Yeah, I don't get to a lot of gigs these days. I've got two fairly young children.
Same,
Yeah,
yeah.
look, especially because gigs are so expensive now. I have to be pretty sure I'm going to have a really good time to spend the
Yeah.
money, take the childcare credit out of the bank to go out for the night.
By the way, you're not going
It's
to university anymore. I'm seeing
yeah.
whoever it is this week. Although actually, I still have a bit of a soft spot for finding those bands that no one else has figured out yet, which seems harder and harder, admittedly, probably because I'm not going to as many things. But I used to love doing that. Just those my favorite band of all time were Never Signed.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you even have the? You must
Yeah,
have some.
I've got stuff, some of their stuff still. They're called Instill with two
No.
L's, and it's very British but heavy-ish. But it's really tongue in cheek. So they do a song called Conkers about playing conkers in the playground, but it's all done as kind of heavy. Everybody wants to play with conkers. And there's bingo, they do C3 equals fudge, which is about getting fudge out of a vending machine to cheer yourself up at work. It's just stuff like that, so tongue in cheek, but they're just so much fun. I used to love finding those bands that you're just thinking like, these are going to be up and coming, or if they're not, I'm just going to have this thing that just feels very personal.
I miss that too. I mean, I was never, I don't want to overly represent myself as like a know-it-all music guy because I'm definitely not. But I did used to, I'd go to like a few gigs a month
Yeah.
and some of them I would be stuff that I just didn't really know much to anything about and I'd just kind of roll the dice on them and stuff. But yeah, as I've got older, I've just commitments,
But you'll
books to
get back
write.
around to it when you're going to take your kids to see Ned's Atomic Dustbin or whoever it might be, if they're still alive then. And
I mean, everyone's still going to be alive producing music forever now, aren't they? If it's
everyone's
to
back. Literally, I can't think of a band apart from Nirvana. And no, to a degree, they're kind of back, which is weird.
they?
Yeah, there was a thing that it turns out Pat Smear, Dave Grohl, why did I pick the least famous member? Chris Novoselic and someone else on vocals, they regularly play together
Oh, really?
doing Nirvana songs. Yeah. Or is it just Pat, Dave and Chris? I'd need to double check that. But yeah, there's a lot, even if they're not back, we still got Queen, even though Freddie Mercury's not been around for however long now. So there's just no stopping it, is there?
It makes me a little sad, this sort of the nostalgia industry in the particularly in the music world, you know, and the dominance of back catalogs and stuff. I don't feel like I'm going to be out there too much, sort of like hunting down new music at the moment. Like I don't really sort of have the time, and I've sort of accepted that I'm unlikely to find more stuff that I will love as much as I love. You just become less capable of loving new music in the same way, I think, as you get
Yeah,
older, don't you?
it is harder, yeah.
I would still prefer new music to be like the leading edge of music and the sort of dominant part of the music world, even if it's not for me. Do you know what I mean? I'd
Yeah.
like other people to be out there consuming that stuff, and going to see that stuff instead of going to see covers bands and
Yeah, well, sadly, it's the last
spent.
band I saw with two covers bands. In terms of stuff you'd recommend,
Right,
be
okay,
it
yeah.
music or otherwise, what's your comic book that you would recommend?
Actually, this follows on quite nice from the Chris Ware chat. Do you know Why Don't You Love Me by Paul Rainey?
Rainey, no.
It is incredible. I only came across it because Paul was doing a signing at OK Comics. It has since he did that signing. I'm not saying the two are connected, although it'd be great if they are, because I'm doing a signing at OK Comics in a couple of days. But it's been picked up as a film, and Jennifer Lawrence is attached.
What?
And it's just the sort of strangest, most impactful thing I've read in years.
Really?
I read it blind, and
Hmm.
I would recommend anyone else do the same. It's really difficult to talk about. It starts as it
Picked a good
starts
one
as
there.
yeah, no. I've picked it to recommend it, not to talk about it
That's
loads.
true. Yeah, that's fair.
He serialized it online, and every page is presented like a sort of Sunday strip.
Oh, yeah, I see.
It's about this couple who just. It's so dark, like they just don't seem to like the kids at all. And you're thinking, why are they like this? And if you sort of persevere with it, it just gets so much bigger and sort of stranger in a way that I don't really want to spoil for anyone who might read it. I wish that everyone listening to this would just, even though they don't know who the hell I am, but just take my word for it and go out and buy it. And even if they're like, oh, I'm not sure about this for the first sort of, 30 odd pages, just kind of stick with it, because there's really more to it than meets the eye in a very rewarding way. But what it feels like anyway when you start reading it is one of those bleak kind of sort of noughties indie, like skewering of the Sunday strip format. It feels like that's what it's doing. You know, those sort of nihilistic indie books from around then.
Yeah.
Like, to a degree, Chris Ware's stuff, just constantly hammering home the message, life is sad.
The
the end, yeah. But then the way it sort of expands out from that. And I really can't say why
Well,
without
that's the
spoiling
thing.
it.
I understand you not wanting to spoil it. There are some books that are quite difficult to explain without giving too much away. I much prefer not reading a blurb normally. I don't even like reading the blurb, which was like even with your book, part of the appeal to me was just seeing some of the quotes, and I didn't read the blurbs initially. I didn't want to. Part of it was the art and just the gist of what I was getting from it, and that was enough. I don't like spoilers. I don't like flicking through the book, any of that. I used to do that when I used to first buy comics from newsagents, as I'd look through all 22 pages and then read it. And then about 4 or 5 months in, I got a massive spoiler at the end, and I thought, why am I doing this to myself?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. get all my comics from OK Comics. I mostly buy graphic novels now, and I'll read whatever single issues I want to read through Unlimited or Infinite, or I'll occasionally buy like Image trades or Dark Horse trades or whatever. But if Jared or Danny from OK recommend something, quite often I'll just sort of buy it without bothering to look at the blurb. And a graphic novel, if it turns out they're wrong, like, yes, you've spent some money on it, but you probably only spent a couple of hours reading it. Whereas if you were to do that with a novel, you're kind of rolling the dice a bit more, aren't you? Because it's, it might be 10, 12, 20, 40 hours of your life. But I'm kind of the same with graphic novels. I'll flick through like a few pages just to see if I like the feel of it, and if I do, I'll kind of go for it. And it'd be nice if people just read Giggs about the blurb, but doesn't work like that, does it? Funnily enough, when we got the physical copies, my relationship with it immediately changed, and I started flicking through. And at a certain point, I was like, "Oh, you don't flick through too far. You don't want to spoil it." It's just like, hang on. Like, fat chance.
I think you've got a rough idea how it ends, at least, anyway.
But just because it was suddenly like a physical
Is that
thing,
it? Are you holding it?
yeah, this is,
Desperate to get hold of it.
yeah, well, tomorrow by
Tomorrow,
chance.
man. It's a nice chunky book, actually.
Yeah, it feels like a proper piece of work, I think. Size delighted with the French, we got French flaps
Oh, nice.
in the
Yeah,
outside.
that's cool. That's Is it surreal holding this project in your hands after knowing all the work that's gone in, and it's that time lapse? How does it feel?
It's nuts, yeah. Like, it was thoughts in my head, and then it was text on a screen, and then it was, images on a screen, and then to sort of suddenly like hold a copy of it just feels so strange. Jared sent me some photos of the shop like ready for launch tomorrow because he's ordered big on it, and there's just piles of it in the shop. I'm like, this, can't believe like that's my book kind of stacked up on the counter there. I'm so used to going in, and it's, I don't know, it'd be like the latest Brubaker and Phillips book that's stacked high on the counter or something. And
Worthy comparison, though, dude.
I mean, he has ordered quite a reasonable number of copies, but yeah, it is very sort of strange, and it does like change your relationship to it. Like, immediately I'm looking at it as if someone else has made it, and I'm expecting like the tactile, like the feel of a price sticker sort of down here, because like all my graphic novels, oh no, that's not true, is it? Look, this is another one from OK Comics, no price sticker, but most of them have like a price sticker sort of in that bottom corner,
Yeah.
because they price them all the same, right? So
Well,
like that's just the physical part of the book
yeah.
to me, having a little price
You're
sticker
gonna
in
have to
that
go and get
corner.
some price stickers now and mark it up, though. Just make a profit on it, just in case someone buys one of you.
So yeah, it's very odd, quite very gratifying though. It's proof that we actually did it,
Did it.
we did it.
That's really cool. Look, from my current read, that was it. And I want to go pick it up and read it again, because I genuinely really, really loved it. Oh, I was going to say something about it then. Just I was going to ask you something, and I realized I can't, because it's possibly a spoiler. But there's something about the twists and turns of it, and the way that you've sort of chapterized the story, I'm trying not to say too much, was a real surprise. I'm reading this thing, I think I'm going with what I understand the flow to be, and then I was somewhere else. It's great. I love being caught off guard by a book. I love it when something's doing something I completely don't expect, and I'm literally just going, where are you taking me with this?
I'm so glad that sort of landed for you, because I like that too. One of my favorite moves in a piece of fiction is like you're so deep down the track with one particular story, and then suddenly you're somewhere else. And even better if it's like 10 million years ago or something, not that. For people listening, not that Giggs suddenly jumps back 10 million years in time.
Spoilers.
Spoilers, yeah. I love that. Not the random twist, but the kind of like, oh, there's some other dimension to this that's suddenly intersected with this one. So yeah, we sort of took it as, I mean, part of me thought, oh well, if we do shorter stories, they'll be easier to manage as like a first, because this is my first big piece of fiction, and like, what a stupid idea, because like you don't you're sort of creating, I want to say, 300% of the work for yourself. I think if I'd written a 270-page linear story that didn't sort of move to different characters in that way and tell sort of shorter stories within it, I do think it would have been like significantly less work, because a lot of the work is in figuring out the kind of arc of that character. And just because it's a bit shorter doesn't necessarily mean it's any easier to deal with. And then, like, sure, you've got less pages to write for each one, but it doesn't sort of save you that much effort. If anything, you're kind of tap dancing around the place trying to figure out how to fit everything you want to fit into it when you're doing kind of short stories within it, like we've
But it
done.
pays off. I think it's worth that time because it paid off. It kind of it gave it another level that I just wasn't anticipating. It just kind of reset my expectations for where the story was going and what it all meant. And anything I think that takes you along for the ride and makes you think and then makes you think again. And that, I don't know, there's just something that just keeps rewarding you about the story. So I'm glad you did. And I know that you,
Thank you.
despite that extra work, you probably are glad you did as well.
I am like, I think it feels like a proper book, like a proper graphic novel. Like sometimes you'll see a graphic novel and you think, oh, this looks lovely, but they can feel quite slight sometimes, can't they? Especially when it looks as nice as Cy's art looks in Gigs. His work's beautiful. We sort of come at it from slightly different angles. He's very much a kind of art-led kind of comics guy. That's his background, and I'm like story, story, story. And yeah, it feels like a book with a little bit of heft to me. I mean, maybe that's because I have things contained in my head that aren't on the page, but I do think there's a certain amount of weight to it, which I'm quite pleased with, because
Well,
it
you
is
should be.
possible this is the only graphic novel I'll ever write. I
No,
hope not,
dude, you've got to
but it
believe,
is
man.
possible.
You've got to
I
believe.
think if this were to be the only one, I could hang my hat on that and be quite pleased with it. To answer what I think was about to be your question, yes, I've got plenty more ideas and stuff
I
that
bet.
I'm kind of re ready to pitch sort of in the wake of this. And Cy and I have a little short story coming up in an anthology that hasn't been announced yet, but with an editor who you will have heard of, which we're quite
Okay.
excited about.
Does it appeal to you to keep doing your own stories, or would you like to have a crack one day at picking up some recognizable characters?
I'd love to do some superheroes or other kind of, sort of pre-established characters. That is the stuff, like in my guts, the thing that is most comics to me is still superhero stories, really. That's kind of my foundation, and they make up a smaller part of my reading now than they used to. But a really great superhero comic is the sort of ideal thing to sit down and read for me still.
I think it's very easy to become kind of apologetic, especially into adulthood, where you're going, "Yeah, I'm reading a superhero book. Like I'm reading Superman, all right?" But great stories are great stories. I really don't think it matters. It's just good to have an array. And I know that the comics field is predominantly led by superhero stuff, but there's so much other stuff out there. But oh my God, isn't the superhero stuff fun? Like you
Yeah.
get the right stuff, really good stories, they'll stay good forever. I mean, we're still talking about Watchmen being the greatest. I mean, I'm not a huge Alan Moore fan, but I know a lot of people will still say Watchmen is the greatest comic book ever made. I kind of feel like there's been a lot of better stuff that's come out since. And it's a shame that we've kind of put it in amber a little bit, and it feels like we've reached the peak in 1986, and it's nothing's ever touched the side since. I just don't think that's accurate. But there's just so much out there to choose from, and so many different stories. But there's nothing wrong with dipping back into your big super universes. They're fun
No, not at
times.
all. And or I'd love to do something for in the Mignolaverse, or Parker. Who's
Oh,
the
Richard Stark?
Richard Stark, yeah. But anyway, there's tons of stuff I'd love to have a swing at. Absolutely. And also, from a more mercenary point of view, if I want to make co comics my living, then monthly comics remains the most financially sound way for a writer to do that. as well.
Does seem to be the case, yeah. We're going to wrap up with the current read. So what is it that you've selected for us tonight?
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't end on Why Don't You Love Me Now, because it's a pretty hardcore read. But the fact that it's not about two parents who hate the kids doesn't make it much less bleak. You know, the way it expands out is also
I think the
pretty
ending on
grim.
something bleak is probably the most British thing we could do, really, because that's how we roll here.
But I think like a fundamental part of my reading DNA is I like to like things and people and characters, and I think that's in gigs too. Like people have said to me, you know, John Higgs, this was very exciting to me. John Higgs said to me, I read it and I was like, oh God, this is bleak. And I was like, do you know John Higgs, the writer John Higgs?
No.
He wrote a phenomenal book about the KLF, and
Oh.
he's written, it's sometimes it's history, sometimes it's philosophy, sometimes he's writing about the theory of magic and how the universe is constructed, and he's great, like non-fiction, it's all non-fiction.
Oh yeah, okay, it's magic
he
with a
wrote he
band of
wrote a
random people.
biography of Doctor Who recently, like a fictional, as a, you know, fictional construct. It was great. But so I'm name dropping and then telling you people. But anyway,
It's the sole reason why you know John Higgs, yeah.
but he was like, oh God, it's bleak, isn't it? I'm like, oh, yeah, it is, but I think there is something sort of hopeful in there, and I think the characters are people you can root for. And
Yeah.
actually, when we started writing it, it felt bleak. Like at this point in time, the future of gigs doesn't feel that bleak to me. I'm like, oh well, at least there's a universal basic income. Someone sort of grasped hold of the situation in some way. You know, I need some hope and kind of humanity in the stuff that I enjoy. And my current read, Hiramashumi, really embodies that story and art by Keigo Shinzo. I've probably absolutely butchered his name. I could barely tell you what it's about, not for the same reasons as Why Don't You Love Me, just because it's barely about anything. It's just very gentle, very sort of quiet. It's about this sort of dropout who inherits this house, and his cousin comes to live with him, and it's just day to day about the lives. The cousin's pursuing a manga career. He is maybe romantically interested in this girl. It's sort of hard to tell. He rides his bike around. He works at like a managed fishing pond. It's just sort of very gentle. It's like a warm bath. And I do love it. And I think it's also something that's kind of interesting to talk about as a, in air quotes, current read. I'm currently up to volume four.
How many volumes are there? Do you know?
There are eight or nine in English so
Oh.
far. It's not that much more than a single issue of a monthly comic these days to go pick up a volume of
Wow.
manga.
Yeah, that's true. Single issues are incredibly expensive at this point, and manga just seems so. You can see why there's been such a big shift towards manga these days. It's just such an incredibly affordable product, isn't it? And I've never heard of this one. We actually do a new manga spotlight episodes, and that's with a friend of mine in Japan who's read this stuff way in
Oh, great.
advance. When he's gone into some of the vast different kinds of stories they're telling. He was trying to describe something like this very thing to me. So yeah, some of them are just stuff happens and people trundle along, and it's nice. I'm kind of intrigued.
I mean, like, it's not gonna blow your socks off. It's just very pleasant, and increasingly that is what I want from at least some of my entertainment. You know, like the world, I spend a lot of time thinking about the worst things that are happening in the world. And you'll know this from having small kids. I get downstairs at 8:30. That's why I suggested 8:30. I get downstairs from doing bedtime at 8:30. Quite often I fall asleep by 9:15. You know, I don't want to spend my precious kind of relaxation time being stressed out.
Fair.
You know, there's enough of that sort of in the world, and I like something gentler at least some of the time.
It certainly seems to meet that comics, essentially, is what they are just a big part of the culture. Whereas it feels like probably more so in this country than even in America, where a lot of comics, mainstream comics are produced, that it's a bit of a battle to get anyone to read anything.
And it's weird that we're still having this battle,
Yeah.
like 20 years or whatever it is into them. It's probably not been quite that long, has it? But into the Marvel films, and like it's super mainstream. You see people walking around in like Marvel t-shirts, Deadpool tops,
Yeah.
Batman stuff all the time. And yet, still, comics are a bit of a ghetto.
Yeah.
Everyone I know is getting press ganged into buying gigs, and a lot of them don't read comics. So it'll be interesting to sort of hear from all those people who's getting their first experience of comics, and it's my book. Is strange. And there's all this talk about how graphic novels are like the biggest, or one of the biggest growth categories in publishing. And have you come across a YouTuber called Matt, like lots of T's at the end of his name?
What does he do?
He does like video essays about comics.
I think I have, but I can't think off the top of my head, because that sounds really familiar, but I can't think now.
Yeah. He did this great video about how Bone was sort of the like the forward guard of sort of graphic novels in the traditional publishing world. And it goes on to detail how basically Scholastic ate Marvel and DC's lunch. Like the percentage of graphic novels that are by Marvel and DC, which, if you're sort of like from the direct market world of comic shops and stuff, like feel like they're all consuming, and they're just tiny actually compared to the all the YA stuff in particular that's getting sold
That's
in
true.
bookshops.
Yes, I saw a video somewhere which was saying that very same thing. I had no clue. I had no clue it was that huge, the Scholastic stuff.
No, I didn't know either. I was like, okay. It does make me think, oh, could I actually, from a financial point of view, it
Yeah.
sort of would make more sense to do some monthly comics. But I think we're probably not that far away from the first sort of few writers kind of making a living just publishing graphic novels for, without doing sort of monthly comics. I mean, there are definitely cartoonists who do that already, but
Yeah.
that world seems to be more geared towards, cartoonists rather than kind of writer artists teams. But it seems like it should be doable, really,
I
if
think it
graphic novels are
is.
selling that well.
Some are. I
I mean,
mean, I can understand them doing the first chunk and getting the money back from that, and then you release the book and blah, blah, blah. And some people prefer one over the other and all that stuff. I much prefer a book now. In a weird way, the way that you can put something on Netflix, for example, and episodes don't have to be the same length. You can just tell the story you want to tell and the page count you want to tell it in. It's not having to be 22 pages every month or 20 pages every month. Just tell your story. And it seems to make a lot more sense to me, especially with independent stuff.
it really creates a rhythm, doesn't it? Even the most sort of writing for the trades, sort of monthly writers and artists, like there's still that kind of rhythm of, 20, 22 pages. You can sort of
Cliffhanger,
feel it in the,
ding.
and it is nice to sort of read something that can pace itself however it wants to pace itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton more to say about Hiroyuki. I mean, one of my problems with, I'm sort of slowly finding my way into manga, but I'm really bad with the names of creators,
Yeah.
titles, characters,
I
and
take a lot of notes.
it makes me feel like really just little Britain.
I know what you mean, though. This part of the reason why I think I like superhero comics is because I can remember that the dude called Cyclops shoots things out of his eye. You
I
know?
mean, I really think that part of the reason superhero comics have been such a success is the characters are super recognizable. Like,
Yeah.
I really like Brubaker and Phillips, but I gave up on Criminal as a monthly series after a while because I just couldn't keep track of who was who and who was doing what. When you're reading,
Yeah.
however many monthly comics and trying to keep track of them all, it really helped. One of them was dressed like a bat. And
What does he do? Oh yeah. Yeah, it does though. It's true. The thing is, I'm quite dyslexic, but someone was lending me books every so often. You need to read more books. You're only reading the stuff with the pictures in. And I was just drawing who the characters were because I couldn't remember, who anyone was. And I thought, like, I'm basically making my own comics. I'm
That's
just going to
great.
go back and read comics. It's easier.
Yeah.
It's less work. Well, look, Mark, thank you so much for coming to the Omniverse and talking to us about gigs and sharing some of your favorite things with us and giving us some recommendations. There's some interesting stuff there to pick on, and it's making me want to go back and read Age of Apocalypse and then take it down a notch with some manga or some of those very grim British comics. But Gigs from Mark Mosedale and Si Smith is out on the 15th of June, so now. From IDW Top Shelf, and this is a book you really, really don't want to miss. So, for more interviews, top tens, spotlights on incoming new collector editions, and a whole host of character and team and event reading orders, head to omniversecomics.guide. Mark, thank you so much for being with us,
Oh,
and
thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
it'd be good to catch up with you again in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks,
Cool.
Dave.